Okay, so that brings up a unique question. I mean, we're talking guns, so we're talking shooting. It's all shooting stuff, but so that brings up another question then, and it's, I guess, more of a philosophical question. But
Oh, this is good.
for large departments, so, and I'm going to use, I listened to a Vortex podcast episode today, earlier this morning, and they were talking about Texas Department of Public Service, so they're troopers, and how they, one year they'll buy red dots. The next year, I think he said next year they're doing carbines or, no, I think pistols is in like two or three. I don't know. Anyway, they do like a new purchase every year, and it ends up being like a 5 year cycle. But so let's take a big department where you're going to have people of all heights, sizes, you know, heights and weights, and hand sizes are all different. Everything's different. Would you be a proponent for saying, putting out a list saying these are the guns that are acceptable, and then purchasing that with department money and making it a department gun, but issued to that individual?
I've actually thought about this more than a little bit, and only because when cops and specifically cop administrators get together, this is the kind of stuff that they actually talk about. I thought it was going to be much more boring, but if you've got let's say like the big department around my house, excluding the city of Milwaukee, has about 90 sworn officers, and they actually have a personally owned, departmentally approved, but they have a list of firearms that they could pick to, like, there are certain guns that are not approved, like nothing single action. They just don't want to deal with it for whatever reason,
Okay.
training issues, all that kind of stuff. So I can see that side. But if I were, if the city of New York just came up and said, "Hey, Chris, we need somebody to pick a gun for us," right? Because they've got, what do they have? I mean, 4,000 sworn. It's a huge number, right?
Is huge, yeah.
Yeah, so I would start with a department gun, and know that the department gun is only going to work. I mean, I'm going to just throw a number out, 80% of the time. So I'm going to pick the Glock 19, right? Everybody can shoot a Glock 19. It fits most people pretty well. It's almost a full size gun. It's an almost a compact gun, so your plainclothes guys and your uniform people can all use the same gun. And I'm just arbitrarily picking the Glock 19. I'm going to pick the
Okay.
Glock 19, and I'm going to give it to everybody. And then everybody that doesn't score well with it, I'm going to then have a slimmer framed, and I don't know if Glock makes a slimmer frame than that anymore. I've lost touch with all that stuff. But there's a lot of different options out there. The SIG 320, I think, fits small hands pretty well.
Okay.
Just in my limited experience with it. So I think you could start with a, most people are going to have this, but we're going to own, 200 of these and 200 of these and 200 of these, and start putting in people's hands that are having difficulties with, the Glock 19, and take the machine out of the equation, because, some people just can't get around a thick double stack gun, but a single stack, I'm dating myself here, but like the old Lady Smith and Wessons, the single stack 9 millimeters, those are really comfortable guns to shoot. And I know they stopped making them a million years ago, but there's other options out there that would give similar capacity, similar ballistics that don't have to fit the mold. I think departments need to be a little bit more flexible for the individuals, more than just say, "This is our stuff." A bad choice for a department gun would be a HK USP in 45. I can barely hold on to that gun. And I can't imagine anybody much smaller than me being able to manipulate it under stress particularly well.
Well, I think you just offended New York City because there's 36,000 sworn police officers.
Oh my God. Well, I guess, yeah, there's 10 million people there, right?
Only 8.5 actually.
Oh, only 8.5. So, all so there's eight all and kinds a half. Of room. And how many square miles is that?
Probably 4. It says it's the largest police department in the United States.
Well, if they need a gun guy, I'm available.
There you go. It's official. Okay. Well, I did not expect 36,000. I figured more than 4, but I did not expect that.
That's a big number. That would probably make a Glock salesman's kids go to college.
I almost in the mid 90s, so 97, I almost went to work for Harris County. I'm not going to say almost, but there was some talk about going to work for Harris County Sheriff's Office, which is the second largest sheriff's office in the country. And I think at that time they had 2,500 officers. So I was like, New York City's got to be bigger than that. But I did not expect 36,000. That's crazy.
But that makes sense. If there's 8.5 million people,
Well, and it makes you wonder, LA actually has more people, but I don't know if LAPD actually has, let's see, number of LAPD. Whoop. Let's get that right. There we go. And that would be
15,000.
So this was August 7th of 2023. The number of officers employed by the Los Angeles Police Department has dropped below 9,000.
Wow.
8,967 officers. It's the third largest, but it's one quarter the size of New York City.
Wow.
I would have never guessed that either. So we're just throwing facts out here tonight. A lot of people are getting an education.
That's a lot of Sam Brown belts.
Wow. Okay. All right. So did you do the same thing? Did you go into law enforcement full time at any point?
I did not. My real job is what my degree is in. I'm a civil engineer by training and trade. My specialty is actually underground utilities. So water mains, sewers, that sort of stuff. I did design work in that, and I worked myself to basically be a project manager, and I wound up being a civil engineering project manager for the municipality that I live in. It's West Allis, Wisconsin, and it's about 65,000 people-ish right now. And I was in charge of executing all of the construction contracts for the city. I did it for 14 years. And so I built bridges, I built libraries, police stations, fire stations, remodeled fire stations, remodeled the health department, built the health department. I've done basically all of the cool things that civil engineers do except build a pyramid. I haven't built any pyramids and I haven't built any aqueducts.
So then nobody can vote for you for Area 5.
I wouldn't vote for me, that's for sure.
You're clearly not Egyptian.
No, that's what I wound up doing. I went to school to be a project manager. I did not go to school to be a utility guy. That's what I wound up doing for quite a bit of time. And I guess that's kind of my segue into the whole USPSA and Area 5 thing. And I'll just say USPSA in general. When you work for the government, one of the biggest things that the electorate, the people of the community want to make sure is that the government stays on budget. And I was told what the pile of money was and whether the pile of money was associated with a particular project or the pile of money was to get us all the way through the end of the year. And me and my team made sure that that happened. And more importantly, that not only that we stayed under budget, but that the city got what we were paying for. So if we were paying for a new road, the new road's going to last. If we're building a fire station, there's enough room for the Lazy Boys and the Xbox and the big TV. You know, that you got to do the priorities.
Okay, so Chris, that brings up some questions then. The bureaucracy of whether it be a county government, a city government, a state government, whatever, and budgets. A lot of times, you know, they put out things for bid. They're like, look, this is the project. We're going to put it out for bid. And a lot of times, you know, what's everybody's big concern? Oh, they're going to go with the lowest bidder. So from your standpoint, how did you select people to do these projects that allowed you to give the people quality for their money, but yet stay on budget?
Well, so this is going to be a little bit long-winded. And first, I have to say, I left the public sector and I now work for the contractor side.
Okay.
So I've taken my experience working from the owner side and I brought it to the contracting side. And I can honestly say that I work for a contractor that does it the right way. And that is our selling point. We do it right. We do it right the first way, and you don't have to call us back because there's nothing to be called back on. Unfortunately, when it comes to government work, we have a state law here in Wisconsin that you have to take the lowest responsible bidder. Now, the definition of responsible, you can play with that a little bit. What I actually found the best way to do, and this is not my idea, the guy who had this job before me, he told me that I'm 24 years old, and he stood next to me out on a construction site. Our feet are muddy, and the machines are whirling around. And he said, this is going to be your job someday. You want to know these people. You want to understand these people. You want to look at it from their perspective so that when it comes time to ask them to do something, one, you're asking them something that can actually be done, right? This isn't impossible. And you understand what it's going to take to actually do it. So that when you go to the politicians and say, you know, I'm going to build a bridge, and the bridge has to hold this many semis, and it has to be this high, and all that sort of stuff, but you have an actual understanding of what that actually costs. Because where things go poorly, in my experience with the government, is if you say it's a $2 million job, it comes in at $4 million, and you wind up having to cut it in half, and you're not getting a 50% job, you're really getting a 15% job, because when you cut something in half, it's just not going to work right. It's just not. So
okay.
That's where there's forethought involved, and my team that I worked with for years was absolutely spectacular. I had a great group of people we did all the design work in-house, and then we did all of the contract execution in-house and all of the inspection in-house. So we had the complete team. And so we could often get the designer out in the field watching the stuff that he designed. You know, he designed it 3 months ago and now he's watching it being constructed over the course of the summer. And everybody learns, whether it's the contractor learning what we're looking for, but that engineer and I was one of them that's able to be out there and actually touch stuff and see how stuff works and understand how things have worked historically and then take it to the next step for the next year and make something just a little bit more efficient. We were able to take not small amounts of money because, I mean, Dave, we're talking $18 to $25 million worth of contracts every year. Mm-hmm. Over, I think a slow year would have been maybe 15, maybe 18 contracts. And I know we got into a couple of years where there were 30 plus contracts, and everything from full buildings to replacing an elevator. You know, so like all don't think that all the contracts were spectacular. Changing out an air conditioner in a library, you know, a big giant building, is quite a project. So, or backup generators after 9/11, we installed a lot of backup generators on a lot of stuff. So that sort of stuff. So all of it wasn't big, huge, you know, think earth moving equipment. Some of the stuff was pretty small, but a lot of it was, in fact, you know, I would say that an average contract cost for us was in excess of $1 million.
Okay. Before we move back into practical shooting, are you the one who had to, when you were in charge of that, did you have to come up with the cost of these items so that you could then go to whatever government official it was that approved of your budget?
Well, and this is where we really did have a great team effort. There was another, like I was on the construction side, and field services was my actual title. So basically it happened outside the building. And then there was a design services guy as well. And he and I would get together, and I had the historical data of this is how much it costs to build something. And he had the historical data of this is what we've built in the past, and this is how we've designed it in the past. And we would merge those ideas in order to come up with here's what we have to tell the politicians this is worth. And historically, in civil engineering world, a project that is within 10% of its bid price is considered a well-run project. You know, one in 10 things go wrong. I personally shot for about 5%. We had a good system in place. I had a great group of contractors that I worked with. I'm now working with one of them now. So I had relationships with all of these contractors that were bidding against each other. I knew their, you know, I knew the superintendent's name. I knew their wife's name. I knew if they had kids. I knew, you know, all that kind of stuff. This guy likes snowmobiling. This guy likes ice fishing. You know, that sort of stuff. It really is it's a symbiotic relation, or it can be a symbiotic relationship. It can be adversarial as well. I decided to go with the symbiotic route. But other people, if they're only running one project, they'll go adversarial and they'll save money on one job, but the next job, the contractor is going to get it back on. So that's
you're almost ruining your reputation right now.
What I know what I look like and I know what I come off as. And I learned very early in life that I look like a football player and I can play dumb like a stereotypical football player from a cartoon. And I'm more than happy to have people underestimate me. But I do a little bit more thinking than I'd like to actually admit. I worry about stuff that I probably don't really have control of. So I work on that. But stuff like project management and budgeting, that's my wheelhouse. I've got a lot of experience with it, and it's not hard. It's very simple math, but you have to have everybody buying in to going to the same goal. Right. And unfortunately, I promised you some humor when it comes to my ideas on USPSA, and I have quite a bit of it, but to be like almost deadly serious because USPSA is that important to me. What we have is we have, and I keep using the word dysfunction online because nobody has agreed on the same end goal. Therefore, we can't get there because everybody's kind of shooting off in other directions. You've got two guys going this way and two guys going that way and a bunch of missing pieces in the middle. I think this is my engineering word, the scope, we're not all talking about the same scope of the same project. And until we get there, I think we're kind of, and I'm not going to say shooting ourselves in the foot, but we're definitely trimming our toenails way closer than they should be. And it's going to be painful putting on shoes.
All right. A good analogy. I like that. I wanted to get back to the practical shooting side of it, but now you've thrown something else out. I have to ask a follow-up question.
We're having a conversation.
I know we are. And over beer. And my question would be, and this is not to say anybody's not doing a proper job, but everything you just said almost made me feel like the president or managing director of the organization and not an area director. Does that make sense? Where you can kind of guide the organization in a certain direction to get everybody on board.
You're probably right, Dave. But I guess let me back up, cause I don't want that job either.
Okay.
So the last few days have kind of magnified, and I'll just say the word dysfunction, cause that's very all encompassing. Everybody involved, I don't care what side of the argument you're on. Everybody involved loves the sport and they love the sport for whatever reason. And they want to do their best. And at some point, we as human beings, not just sportsmen, but we as human beings have stopped listening to the other side. And in this particular case, I'll say the other side is very silent. And I don't know if it's because the interweb of connected computers is too complicated and that's not the best way for them to communicate. But I would like to, rather than just sit here and spew howler monkey talking points, and I've got them all, and I probably agree with 99% of them, but rather than spew howler monkey talking points is... why is the other side of the argument not being made? What are there numbers? Are there documents? Are there ideas that we should be considering before picking what the next path is? And I don't know how to do that. The area director is kind of the thing that got plunked in front of me, and this whole story, and I've told the story to so many other people, and I guess I'll tell you too, Dave. You know, my sons are on the Instagrams, and they come to me at the kitchen table, and we try to have dinner together at least a couple of times a week, and they're like, hey, did you see these guys are getting kicked out of USPSA? I said, no. So now I'm introduced to Derek. I knew who Ben was already. And I start watching and I keep trying to figure out why they're getting kicked out. Write a couple emails trying to find out, hey, why are these guys getting booted? I see what they're saying online. And I got silence from the organization. And then I actually wound up in Rio Salado and shooting a 2-day local match. It was a level one. They were gearing up to the area 2 match, I believe, was being held within a couple of months. So they were testing out props and squad movement and all that kind of stuff. It was a wonderful match. And I was on the squad following the area 2 director. And probably the nice way to put it was asking questions of the area 2 director the answers kind of made my blood boil. I didn't hear about facts, and I didn't hear about specific charges, and I didn't hear about the abilities to defend themselves. I heard about a hammer being dropped because a hammer could be dropped. And I've got to go back and I've got to explain this to a couple of 17-year-old boys that I've taught to punch things, that I've taught to grapple things, that I've taught how to shoot a gun. And then I've got to tell them that this is how people treat other people. And this is how, when you disagree, this is how you deal with it. You just, if you've got the hammer, you just use the hammer, and that's just the way the world works. That's not the legacy that I want to pass on to the next generation. I've given these two boys, and I don't want to leave my daughter out, but she's out of the house, so I kind of forget about her because she just costs me money randomly, but not every day directly. But you know, I've given a certain set of skills to these young men. They're going to go out into the world, you know, inside the next 24 months, and they're going to go off and do things as men. And to me, being a man is sometimes changing your mind and admitting that you're wrong. And back to Boromir in, you know, Fellowship of the Rings, right? I've had some bad ideas, and at my own kitchen table, I had the rule, you know, if dad's doing something you don't like, let's have a conversation about it. If dad's wrong, he'll change his mind. And my kids have changed my mind, you know, whether it's on punishments or on household rules and that kind of stuff. Sometimes you don't see all the facts, or you don't see it from somebody else's side. I did not get that experience. I mean, Dave, I really did not get that experience. I knew that Ben and Derek were kicked out of USPSA before they did. I sent a message to Derek after leaving the range that they were getting booted, and they're like, yeah, we know it's coming, we just don't know when. But USPSA did not tell Derek that he was booted. I actually knew about it days before he did.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've made that accusation public, and I've written that down for USPSA to do with as they please. And well, I don't dig on unfairness. You know, you want to cook the books, you want to write unfair rules, write them down, and then I'll decide whether I'm going to play or not. But to be, and I'll just say, blatantly un-American in the treatment of some of the members because you don't like what they're saying, why haven't we had any counterfactuals? Why haven't we opened up the books or opened up the records and said, this is what we were thinking at the time, this was our best idea, and it just didn't work? You know, we continue to run negative budgets, and I can understand from a business standpoint running a negative budget for a period of time on purpose. Hey, we're going to dump more money into advertising. We're going to invest in equipment and materials and infrastructure. I totally get it, but we're going to recoup that cost in, you know, 36 months, 60 months, whatever that is. What's the plan? I don't see a whole lot of plans. Matter of fact, I see the complete absence of plans.
Yeah.
From, again, my limited experience watching now, is it technically 1.5?
Right.
Board meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. And my biggest pet peeve in life is hypocrisy. That is, if there's one thing that will piss me off, is it is hypocrisy. So to now hear, and look, neither one of us really wants to get into the politics of what's going on right now, but I will say this, that, you know, they just voted someone out of office for what they call releasing confidential information. But yet what you just told me was another area director did the exact same thing. in his talk with you, you knowing that someone was being booted before they actually did is confident, should be confidential.
I totally agree. And I'm not, you know, maybe I have my facts wrong. I am more than willing to sit in the same room with that individual and say it. And I am more than willing to be proved wrong. And I will apologize. But to the best of my recollection and my understanding of the dates of that match and the dates of everything else, I believe that I am correct. And okay. Again, could be wrong. That's pretty small potatoes, except the fact that we've already booted another area director for something way less because, I mean, it was posted on Facebook already, but I don't understand. And kind of back to the worldview, I don't understand where anybody, and I won't say anybody, where the legacy group that's been controlling the organization for so long, where they think this is going. What's the plan? You know, we've seen the last few years worth of budgets. One, those aren't budgets. I get they don't want to get in too deep because, you know, the howler monkeys are going to howl. But there's got to be some internal documents that say, you know, low cap nationals cost this much. You know, race gun nationals cost this much. Three gun costs this much. You know, whatever it is, those internal documents need to exist, and somebody needs to have their feet to the fire to make those numbers actually happen. And I know Yeeman's running Carry Optics this year. I don't know if he's doing it that way. I hope somebody is somewhere, but looks like we lost more money in 2023. We can only bleed for so long until something's got to change. And I know everybody likes shooting nationals except me. I've been to three of them. They're okay. I traveled last year with Jennifer, and I traveled the year before with my boys to LOCAP. Great fun. And the year before that, I traveled with my buddy. Great fun, good match, but it's not all that. For me personally, I'm okay never shooting another nationals. I'm good, right? I've had the experience. Party Optics Nationals, is that a thing? I don't know. But at some point, we're going to have to realize where we're spending money or where the organization is spending money. And something's going to have to be shaved down in order to make a budget actually work. Everybody's like, well, you don't cut my nationals. And I'm like, well, I don't know what your nationals are. Maybe we got to go back to having, two national championships for a couple of years and actually, make the poor pros pick a division, rather than shooting all of them.
Right.
And I get it, the sponsors, they want their guy to win to sell product, and that's a thing, but we're bleeding cash. And if this was our household income, you can only put it on the credit card so often till the credit card's maxed.
Right. I just want to make a comment on something you mentioned earlier. You're talking about seeing the financial numbers for what it costs, but also much earlier in the conversation, I asked you how you kept on budget, how you selected contracts. Mm-hmm. And you said there were two of you, you had numbers for how much construction normally costs and what it was historically. And you had another guy who said, historically, this is what we've paid for this type of stuff. So, and assuming Scott Arnberg was being honest, then that information should be available to all of the board of directors as well. Every single financial report of anything going back to 1985, if need be.
I totally agree. And I was ultimately responsible for the cost of all of the construction for all of those years. And I had a meeting every single week. Every single week. So every 7 days, we discussed what projects are on schedule, what projects are off schedule, what projects are on budget, what projects are off budget. And we had a budgeting system where, let's say, for capital construction, roads and bridges and sewers and stuff, we had $8 million. We knew that we would bid out in the spring when the big projects can start so that you have the whole construction season. We'd bid out $8.5-9 million if we had 10 to spend, you know, across all of the disciplines or whatever. And we would have, and I'm just going to say, a $500,000 budget surplus. And then come August, we kind of know where the projects are and what's going well, what's not going well. Hey, we had this change, but hey, we had this big credit over on this job because something wound up being easier or whatever. And in mid-August, usually before September-ish, we kind of knew what we had extra. And then we would let a small project that used up that money to, one, to keep my contractor friends happy, because then they could work into Christmas or New Year or into Thanksgiving, because most of them want to shut down about Thanksgiving for deer hunting. But, you know, into Thanksgiving, if they want to keep a crew working till Christmas and the weather allows, they could do that, or we'll just finish it up in the spring. And, but that constant tracking of budget costs, you know, here's what we've spent for sure. You know, these are the payments we've already made. That cash is gone. Here's what we're expecting this project to still cost. Round numbers, $2 million projects. We've spent $1.2 already. We've got $800,000 still out there, but we've probably got another $50,000 worth of extras on it. So we got to make sure that $50,000 comes out of contingency so that that project can stay whole. And now those contingent projects at the end of the year are going to have to be a little bit smaller. And it's not hard and it's not rocket science, but it does require a dedicated eye. And with USPSA, really USPSA does what, like 86 nationals, and I don't even know how many national matches are there, six? Plus multi-gun and steel challenge?
I'll tell you in just a second exactly how many it is. There are five. Well, that's five including the IPSC Nationals. So there's normally four USPSA and then one IPSC.
Plus steel challenge.
Yeah, plus steel challenge.
So this year it's five and two, so seven.
Okay.
I would think with, I think Jake's got everybody blocked on Instagram and Facebook that needs to be blocked at this point. So he could definitely concentrate on, you know, monitoring the budgets of what's being spent. And, you know, this is what staff costs. This is what bottled water costs. This is what, you know, the secret range negotiation price costs. You can keep that out, you know, keep it secret right next to the aliens. And just, you know, you could track all of that stuff. Okay. Our staff cost is X. Our water and golf carts and, you know, the stupid lanyards that we get at, and all the, you know, the USPSA Velcro things for our belts. That's what all this costs. You could know this is how many people have signed up. This is how many advertising slots we gave away. This is how much is going to come in from actual match fees. This is what we've spent. And I totally get them not making money. I don't buy into it, but I get it. And so you could say, okay, Single Stack is going to lose $50,000. Carry Optics Nationals is going to lose $150,000. And Race Gun Nationals is going to lose $75,000. So what did I just say? $275,000 in the hole. Where's that money going to come from now? That's where you go back to, Jake comes back to, you know, the other boardroom where the staff meets, and said, and Donna says, hey, here's the people that have renewed this year. This is how much we're making in renewals. And this is how much we're making in merchandise sales. And this is what we're making in activity fees. And Troy says, this is how many RO classes we're having, and that's $50 a pop, and we're expecting this much income from this many classes. And they start looking at the whole, here's our income, here's our export, what's the delta between the two? And if the delta is negative, something has to change. But yes, changing, I would be a bit draconian, I'm thinking. I would just basically have one or two national championships plus Steel Challenge plus multi-gun. And I think that would get us pretty close to balanced. If it has to be one, then so be it. But, you know, until you see all the expenditures and you see all of the income, I don't know how you would even make that decision.
Right. And
or even have the conversation. How do you even have the conversation?
Right. And I mean, from the outside looking in, you know, I will never see those numbers, but I mean, that is exactly what those on the inside need to see, all of those numbers.
Yeah. And, you know, from my government experience, the total budget costs of projects, that was published. I mean, flat out, you know, the rebuilding of Smith Street from First Street to 10th Street is budgeted at, you know, whatever the cost is. And that budget number would include staff time. It would include contractor costs. It would include all of the ancillary costs, like we planted our own trees along the roads. So the forestry costs would be built into that. And we had a magic computer system. It looked like an Excel spreadsheet to me, but I was told that it was much more complicated than that. And there was a whole room full of bean counter people that told me if I had money or not. But each one of those things had a separate account number attached to them. So the contractor cost was item number one. The DPW cost was item number two. The forestry cost was item number three. And of course, it was the government, so it wasn't just a single digit number. It had some hyphens in there and probably some letters and all kinds of stuff. But to make us look smart, this isn't rocket science. Anybody that's balanced their checkbook can see when they're out of money, and they can see, okay, next month I've got to pay my mortgage. Next month, you know, I really like these electric lights. I'd like them to be on again. I've got to pay the electric company. I must be missing something. And I joke that it's USPSA is actually a CIA front for hiding aliens. And that our current attorney is actually our CIA handler. And that the whole reason that everything is all hush hush is because they think they've been found out and that they're trying to hide the aliens from us.
Okay.
It's the only logical explanation here. USPSA was set up by the CIA to hide alien bodies.
I'm going with it. That's it. Quote newsflash, breaking news.
Quote me.
You heard it here first. Okay. Now that I've caught up on most of my follow-up questions, I've got a couple, but they can wait. So let's get back to practical shooting for a moment. You've been doing it for quite a while. I assume you're an RO, CRO, something of that nature.
CRO. And so after shooting in the 90s, I took a, apparently I didn't take an actual 20-year break. I have a classifier in from around the 2000-ish, or maybe it was 2011. I don't remember. I have one classifier, like, but I actually came back to the sport in 2019. And
okay.
And you know, the things to change your mind on, putting a red dot on a gun. I had an officer show up with a red dot. He said, "Chief, can I use it?" I said, "Sure, why not?" And then he let me play with it, and then I had to have one. And then I had, but then I had to train with it. And what was right. the best way of training? I said, "Oh, we're going to go back and we're going to shoot IPSC." It's not called IPSC anymore. But USPSA found a local range. It became immediately addicted to it, just like I was a million years ago. About 5 guns later, and who knows how many more holsters.
Oh, by Hellwig.
Yeah. I'm sure I have thrown that holster away, but it was an Australian company. That's all I remember. And I ordered it from a gun magazine, you know, like where you actually had to put your money in a money order in an envelope.
Right.
And send away. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say that because I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but back when being a postal worker, you could actually make extra money on the side by collecting checks coming through the mail.
Yes. Yes. once upon a time, that was a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So where I was going with that is the 4+ years you've been back, have you gotten into any match directing or assisting with that?
So very quickly, the Schultz Resort Rod and Gun Club is my local club here. I am the match director for our monthly USPSA match. We have a separate match director for our Steel Challenge. We have a separate match director for our PCSL. And another USPSA club, the Northern Illinois Shooters Association, NISA, N-I-S-A, they shoot at Schultz as well. So we have a Schultz matches the second Sunday, NISA's the fourth Sunday, Steel Challenge is the first Saturday, and then PCSL is kind of, they usually do this third Sunday-ish, with the third Saturday being IDPA. So we've got a pretty vibrant club. Had to join immediately because the guys were great. They were dumb enough to let me in. Then they were dumb enough to elect me to the board of directors.
Oh.
Yes. And because I could touch type, they elected me as the corporate secretary. I've got a little bit of experience with meetings and Robert's Rules of Order. And I showed up for the first meeting being the new guy. So, you know, okay, I must have missed the agenda. I didn't, you know, these guys don't strike me as email type guys. I show up at the meeting. Dave, there's no agenda for the meeting. The gentleman told me, "Oh, we have an ad hoc meeting." And I said, "Do you know what ad hoc means?" And he says, "Oh, that means we just make it up as we go." I said, "No, ad hoc is like Latin for like for this reason. It means you're having only one topic. So are you sure you mean ad hoc?" "Yes, definitely ad hoc." I said, "So what you're really telling me is there's no agenda." And so 3.5 hours later, I walked out of my first rifle club board of directors meeting, having typed up the meeting minutes, only to then disseminate the meeting minutes, and I quoted people on what they were saying. Like I put quotes and I said, you know, "This gentleman said this." And they freaked because they didn't want to be quoted in public saying things that might not look quite right at the end. So I've done my fair share of cleaning up board processes, and over the years discussing the direction of where the club probably should be going with other people and changing those board of directors through elections and through real legit conversations. I mean, there were people that I adamantly disagreed with, but we sat down and we had a beer together and, hey, here's where you're coming from. Here's where I'm coming from. Why are you yelling at the USPSA guys because we're comping matches if you help set up the match you used to shoot for free? And, I mean, seemed straightforward enough. You know, they're putting on the match. There's still 40 to 65 shooters going through. We're not really losing money. Well, we're losing the activity fees and the classifier fees. Okay, I totally understand. The previous match director wanted to step down. I step in and I said, okay, set up guys, you got to shoot for $5 now. That covers our activity fees. We usually run two classifiers. So $4.50 goes to the organization. I think that maybe it's $3.50. I don't know. So the club isn't losing money on you anymore, and everybody's happy. You know, just a little give and take, a little conversation, rather than pissing and moaning at each other and screaming and all that, the stuff that doesn't get anything done.
Right.
So I've okay. actually been the corporate, I've actually been the corporate secretary since 2019. So I shot my first match in, I think, April of 2019. I think I joined in May or June, and I was on the board of directors that same year. So apparently, okay. I can't avoid this kind of stuff.
Apparently not. You like walked right into an ambush there. Oh, you're now on the board.
Right.
What? I didn't get that memo.
Okay. Well, there was an election and everything, but it just.
Okay, so you did post that all of your stuff is into the organization, so you are an Area 5 candidate.
Yes, yeah, and I have the both Heather and Donna have confirmed that's the case.
Okay, now you seem like you've got a lot of stuff going on. So one of the things I like to ask is, for those listening and those who may or may not vote for you, do you have the time to dedicate to being an Area 5 director?
Well, I'm rethinking the Area 5 director job. I see the Area 5 director job as, and I'll just say, directing. I do not have the time to travel all over the area, shoot matches, and shake everybody's hands. I would like to lie to everybody and say, boy, I'm just really looking forward to seeing everybody on the range. The number of cruddy people that I have met shooting USPSA is probably less than three. I can actually only think of one. So, I mean, everybody's been great and welcoming, and we all kind of have a shared thing. So I would love to have the time to do that. And quite honestly, if the org was running smoothly, I think that would be a great thing for an area director to be able to do, to go out and visit the individual clubs and see what's the same in all the clubs and what's different in all the clubs and how the organization might be able to better serve all of the clubs. I think that has a value. But at this point, I see being the area director as, and I'm just going to say, babysitting the budget. Like, who's spending what, when, and why? And I'm not saying that to be controversial or even to be accusatory. Somebody's got to watch the checkbook. you just don't randomly spend too much money all the way across the board in damn near every single column. That doesn't just magically happen. Somebody should have been looking at that, saw that it was happening, and correcting course. What was the plan if this goes wrong? You know, I get it when you're building a house and you run out of money, you still got to find a way to put a roof on it. I totally get that. But where were the exit ramps on any of those past budgets? And I don't know that they existed, but I think the next generation of area directors are going to spend a whole lot more time with an Excel spreadsheet than with a speed holster. And that's my take on it. I personally, all of my kids are athletes. I want to go watch them do athletic stuff. I want to hang out with my boys at the range, but I am perfectly good shooting a spectacular level one within driving distance of my home on a Saturday or a Sunday than taking a 4-day trip. And I'm not saying that you can't work remotely and you can't review Excel spreadsheets at night, but after you spend all day Thursday setting up, all day Friday shooting and pasting, and then all day Saturday ROing or CROing, I don't see a lot of budget manipulation happening. So I think from my end, I see somebody looking at those spreadsheets and somebody holding the organization accountable to the members as a little bit more important than scooting oneself all over and shooting all of the nationals.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.